Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends. It's Friday, May 14, and time for this week's Roundtable, where we look back on the news of the week with three top political reporters. A special thanks to Jason Dick of CQ Roll Call for filling in as guest host while I was on the West Coast for the last couple of weeks. And for my first week back, what a busy week it's been. Two big back-to-back meetings on Wednesday captured most of the headlines. First, a meeting of the House Republican Caucus, which took only 15 minutes to dump Liz Cheney from her leadership post because she refuses to accept Donald Trump's big lie that he and not Joe Biden won the last election. And then just a couple of hours later, a meeting in the Oval Office with President Biden and Democratic and Republican leaders of the House and Senate to discuss possible compromise on the president's big infrastructure plan. And the week ended with a big smile on everybody's face, a smile you could actually see for the first time in a long time. As the CDC said, as long as you're double vaxxed, you can take off your mask. Here with a smile on their faces today, today's panel, Leah Askaranam, Editor-in-Chief, National Journal's Hotline. Hi, Leah.
Hi, Bill. Also
joining us from Washington, Sudeep Reddy, Managing Editor of Politico. Hello, Sudeep.
Hi, Bill.
And joining us from a little farther away, Gabe DiBenedetti, National Political Correspondent for New York Magazine. Hello, Gabe.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome to you all. Leah, I want to start with an announcement yesterday by Rachel Walensky, Director of the CDC, which then President Biden announced from the Rose Garden. Here she is.
Today, CDC is updating our guidance for fully vaccinated people. Anyone who is fully vaccinated can participate in indoor and outdoor activities, large or small, without wearing a mask or physical distancing.
So, Leah, a public health issue, but I start there because the fact that the president announced it from the Rose Garden indicates this has a pretty big political implications as well, doesn't it?
I think so. We've seen the last week that Biden's plan to get things back to normal has had a few setbacks, especially with the latest jobs report, which was not good news. And was not indicative of things getting back on track and, you know, getting back to a new normal or an old normal or any sort of normal. This is, I think, a pretty clear step toward normalcy. Some of us might still wear masks and maybe enjoyed that extra safety net for the last year and a half or so. But it is a sign that, you know, things are getting to where Biden has said they're going to be getting to throughout his 2020 campaign and throughout his presidency so far.
And he wanted to make sure yesterday that the good news is seen as his good news, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we see this all the time with presidents and their first year in office. You know, there's things that happen that are good and things that happen that are bad. And the good things are always, you know, their accomplishment, and the bad things is always the last guy's fault. So this is pretty typical first year of president politics.
So let's get back now to the raw politics of the day, starting with Liz Cheney's ouster from her position as number three leader in the Republican Party House caucus. No longer, of course. Gabe, it took the Republican caucus only 15 minutes. But does anybody outside of the Republican caucus care about what happened? Does this have any implications, you know, beyond inside baseball?
Usually, I would say no, but I think in this particular case, there's at least some glimmers of reasons to believe that the answer is potentially yes. And I'm qualifying that for a lot of reasons, and that's because how many different times have we heard over the last few years, oh, this break in the Republican Party is going to change everything. But this one might be different, in part because of Cheney's media savvy. She clearly has set herself up to be a outside voice here. You know, she's still in the caucus just because she's not a leader, which, of course, is a role that most real people don't have any idea what it actually entails. It doesn't change the fact that she's still in Congress. And she's made very clear that she plans to be a big voice, whether that's in interviews, by showing up and doing interviews in early primary states to get people talking about, oh, is she going to run for president? So, you know, the big question that a lot of people asked yesterday was, well, is she going to start a third party? I think a lot of Republicans are not worried about that because their primary concern with a third party would be that Donald Trump would start one, not that one of these breakaway folks would. But the other piece of this that I think could potentially be quite interesting in terms of Washington dynamics is how the White House reads this. There's a world in which Joe Biden, in particular, who is someone who has been open to working with Republicans, but not necessarily completely all the way there recently, might see this and say, well, maybe this is the last straw. If they're really going to exile anyone who makes the case that the election was won in a legitimate way, then I just can't work with them. And he might, you know, decide that this bipartisanship as a virtue is much less virtuous than he thought it was. All of this remains to be seen, which is a very, very, very long way of saying, maybe.
What is your read, Sudeep? I saw this morning some discussion. People are saying that this is a civil war inside the Republican Party, and others saying, no, it's not a civil war, it's a purge. How's it play? What's it mean for the Republican Party?
It is a purge of certain people. It's a party that is willing and eager to have Marjorie Taylor Greene within the fold, doing her thing, saying what she says, but kicking out and elevating Elise Stefanik likely to a senior post, someone who has not necessarily been in line with former President Trump, and kicking out somebody who has long been considered a conservative, somebody who's in line with the voting record. It just shows how difficult it's going to be for Kevin McCarthy or anyone else to pull the party together in a cohesive fashion post-Trump. But this is really the story of the last decade with Republicans that we saw in the John Boehner era and the Paul Ryan era. They had difficulty with the way the party is structured, the number of wild ideas that seem to come forward in the party. And it just created a void for somebody like Donald Trump. And this is going to create either an opening for Trump or a Trump-like figure next.
Well, as Gabe indicated a little earlier, it's pretty clear, she has made it very clear, that Liz Cheney is not going to go away quietly, right? Here are a couple of comments back to back. First, what she told reporters right after she walked out of that vote, and what she told Savannah Guthrie just an hour or so later.
I will do everything I can to ensure that the former president never again gets anywhere near the Oval Office. We have seen the danger that he continues to provoke with his language.
I think you've watched over the course of the last several months the former president get more aggressive, more vocal, pushing the lie. And I think that's a really important thing for people to understand. This isn't about looking backwards. This is about the real-time, current potential damage that he's doing, that he continues to do. It's an ongoing threat. So silence is not an option.
Ooh, Leah, so wow, watch out. Here she comes, right? How serious a threat?
So she's made pretty clear that her goal over the next 2 and 4 years is going to be making sure that Donald Trump does not return to the White House. So, I mean, she's kind of joining the ranks of, you know, some former Republicans and who maybe are involved in the Lincoln Project, some of the usual suspects. But the difference is that Liz Cheney has made very clear that she is staying a Republican, and that she said this morning on Fox News to Bret Baier, she would never vote for a Democrat. That is not the alternative. What she's trying to do is redefine the party that, you know, she's used to, that her father is used to. What's baffling to me is that Republicans continue to preach about unity. That is their kind of main reason for ousting her. But as the minority party, Republicans don't necessarily need to be united. What they need is as many supporters as possible. If you think about the 2018 midterms, you had on one hand, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the Squad getting elected. And on the other end, you had moderates like Ben McAdams in Utah and, you know, a anti-abortion Democrat Dan Lipinski in Illinois getting elected at the same time. There was plenty of room for division. The thing that helped Democrats was the one place they were united was in their opposition to Donald Trump. So I'm a little bit confused. I've been a little bit confused the last few weeks about this campaign and drawing even more attention to the divisions when, you know, those divisions don't need to be a problem for Republicans to win back the House and the Senate.
But don't they have to decide, Gabe, whether they go with Donald Trump into the future or without Donald Trump into the future? I mean, we've certainly seen a split on that. Here are the classic Trumper, I guess, Lindsey Graham saying, you know, there's no future without him. Here he is again.
It's impossible for this party to move forward without President Trump being its leader. And to try to erase Donald Trump from the Republican Party is insane. And the people who try to erase him are going to wind up getting erased.
Gabe?
Yeah, I think what Lindsey Graham said there is a way of answering your question, which is I don't think Republicans have to make a decision because I don't think they can make a decision. The decision has been made for them. You know, we're 5 years into this conversation, if not longer. It's not like any day now someone can stand up and say, you know what, enough is enough. They've tried that. Donald Trump is the overwhelming force in the Republican Party. And the really remarkable thing right now is he's not doing anything. He's just sitting in Mar-a-Lago, you know, issuing statements once in a while.
Playing golf.
sure, exactly. And but, you know, the Republican Party has so empowered him over the last half decade that it's very clear that anyone who crosses him or who even disagrees slightly with him in most circumstances or in many circumstances at least is susceptible to you know, complete pummeling from his supporters who see anything other than, you know, total fealty as you know, the complete betrayal. So the idea that the Republican Party can decide to go in a different direction here is a false one. But what you do see is some people like Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell, so their leaders in Congress, trying to make the case publicly that, well, we don't talk about Donald Trump. You know, we like Donald Trump, but that's the past, you know, et cetera. But then at the same time, you know, flying down to Mar-a-Lago on the weekends, tweeting pictures with him, and essentially just trying to divorce these two things, you know, the art of governance insofar as that's actually happening with politics. But obviously those things are one and the same in many, many cases.
All right. So, Sudeep, if the anti-Trumpers are able to get together at all and do anything, we saw maybe an effort at that yesterday with the announcement of what's called a call for American renewal by a group of pretty well-known Republicans, still Republicans, who say the party has lost its way. We've got to get it back on track. And if the party doesn't get back on track, they indicate they might even want to form, as someone else mentioned, a third party. I have in front of me the Washington Post op-ed this morning. The GOP has lost its way. Join our new alliance by former Congressman Charlie Dent, Congressman Denver Riegelman, former RNC chair Michael Steele, former governor of New Jersey Christine Todd Whitman, former Congresswoman Barbara Comstock is part of this. What do you think, Sudeep? Is this going anywhere?
Yeah, also known as the Never Trump Party.
Yeah, right.
And look where it got them over the last 4 or 5 years. It's an interesting group of people. They're all prominent. There are some of the names here are the who's who of the party, people who you would have thought of as traditional conservatives in a different pre-Trump era, perhaps making a call for a parliamentary system for us to go toward. They're not going to be able to pull together the kind of coalition that Trump did. That's the magic of Donald Trump, is he could pull the traditional conservatives with business and economics minds together with the rural conservatives and just about everybody. And he formed a coalition that few others could. And this is a group that I think is going to be interesting and effective in making their voice heard, perhaps aligned with the Liz Cheney mission of making sure Donald Trump doesn't see the Oval Office again. But are they actually able to form something new out of this that is lasting? There are certainly memories of the Reform Party and others that have been tried before over the last quarter century, and here we are.
Yeah, and Sudeep, if I can just jump in on this for one second. Bill, you said when you were introducing this group, one word over and over, and that was former. None of these people are currently in office or have any political power whatsoever. So they have a platform, but the fact that they don't have actual jobs with the Republican Party tells you all you need to know.
And the only one, I don't see her name on this list, but I think you could count Liz Cheney probably as part of this group. And she is still a congresswoman, but who knows for how much longer, right?
No, I mean, the names that are on that list, I mean, Michael Steele, did you know that he's an anti-Trump Republican? Because I do. I've seen him on cable news. Evan McMullen, the former Utah presidential candidate whose whole campaign was a protest against Trump. These are all names that we've seen over and over again. And I think it's just like Sudeep was saying, like what's different now? How does this change anything? And then the bigger question is, do any of the current elected officials on there, which I don't remember seeing, I guess you could, I don't know if any.
I don't think there is one. There's certainly not one Republican senator.
Right, definitely. And I don't know if any of the 10 impeachers, Republican impeachers are on there. But that's the question, is whether those 10 folks can make it through. The rest of this, it just kind of seems like a new way of formatting old news.
Yes. So we've talked a lot here about some of the people who are outside the party. Interesting, some of the people who are still very much inside the party and the Republican caucus who have made waves in a different direction, but nobody seems to care about that. Let's get into that with our panel after we take a quick break here on the Bill Press Pod. And today's roundtable is brought to you by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. Under the leadership of President Mark Perrone, we remember when this pandemic started, we heard so many stories about those people, particularly on the front lines, and many of whose members caught COVID because of their exposure as they were doing their work in our big grocery stores and the meatpacking plants across the country. All members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, the UFCW, they have continued to serve us throughout the pandemic at our retail, big retail stores, at grocery stores, meat processing plants, chemical plants, and cannabis plants. We thank them for their service, salute them for their good work, and thank them also for their support of the Bill Press Pod, and direct you to their website at ufcw.org.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we're back with today's roundtable. Today's roundtable with Leah Iskaranam from National Journal Hotline, Gabe DeBenedetti, New York Magazine, and Sudeep Reddy from Politico. As we mentioned there before the break, all the focus on those who've been tossed out of the Republican caucus lead also to consideration of some of the people who are still in. Here's one, Andrew Clyde, a Republican member from Georgia, had a hearing this week to look into the insurrection of January 6th. Congressman Clyde said, hey, looks just like everyday tourists to me.
Let me be clear. There was no insurrection, and to call it an insurrection, in my opinion, is a bold-faced lie. Watching the TV footage of those who entered the Capitol and walked through Statuary Hall showed people in an orderly fashion staying between the stanchions and ropes taking videos and pictures. You know, if you didn't know the TV footage was a video from January the 6th, you would actually think it was a normal tourist visit.
A normal tourist visit where people were breaking windows, smashing doors, pummeling police officers, in fact, killing police officers. Gabe, did you and I see the same video?
Yeah, we certainly did. I don't know if Congressman Clyde did, even though he was presumably there. I don't know what to say about this other than that it's a complete disgrace. I mean, this is just an alternate reality, and that's what a lot of Democrats on Capitol Hill have been saying. I mean, you can see where this is going, of course. You can see denial of January 6th as being at all an important event in the nation's history sort of becoming a litmus test for the Republican Party, the modern Republican Party. I don't want to overstate. Mm-hmm. This is just one sort of far right-wing young congressman, but this is obviously a line of argument that others have been leaning towards. And you can understand why he's making this from a purely coldly political perspective, which is just, you know, if he acknowledges that this was an assault on our democracy, which, by the way, it was, then that throws into question the entire reason that his party is trying to brush this under the rug and move on. This should not be a partisan statement. We all saw what happened, and to pretend otherwise is a dereliction of duty, period.
And Sudeep, there was no condemnation I heard from Kevin McCarthy of Andrew Clyde, nor any condemnation of Marjorie Taylor Greene or Paul Gosar or other pretty radical members of the Republican caucus. What does this say about the role of Leader McCarthy?
it shows there's only so far. He's willing to go in this moment. There was a clip floating around of McCarthy standing up and saying Donald Trump was responsible for this.
Yeah.
In some way back after it happened, and he was very clear about reality. So it's not like Kevin McCarthy doesn't know what the reality is here. He does, and he articulated it quite clearly months ago. His problem now is that he can't have this standing with the Republican Party. He can't have reality sitting as the impression of what the party is and what it stands for. But that's what it is and what it stands for at the moment, and he is not going to be able to control that. So creating a reality distortion field is his goal, and it's very Trumpian. It's what Donald Trump did all these years, and what Kevin McCarthy has to learn how to do, but he's not really very good at it at the moment.
Right. And Leah, so right after, if speaking again about McCarthy's role, right after McCarthy oversaw the ouster of Liz Cheney, he went to the White House for this meeting with the leadership and the president and was asked whether or not he accepts the presidency of Joe Biden as legitimate. And Kevin McCarthy swears to reporters, nobody questions the legitimacy of President Biden. Here's a short clip by Leader McCarthy.
But I don't think anybody is questioning the legitimacy of the presidential election. I think that is all over with.
All over with? Nobody questions the legitimacy of the election, Leah? He does.
And President Trump does. That's what, I mean, as much as Liz Cheney is on TV and, you know, calling out, you know, her, what she thinks is her, Republicans enabling the big lie, she's not the one putting this in the center of the narrative of 2022. Republicans are trying to avoid this. They're trying to talk about the Biden agenda, but it's going to be Donald Trump who is consistently talking about the election. Right now, he's just doing it on email, you know, sending out statements, calling Liz Cheney foolish, which when she responds to those, she gets called disruptive for, you know, bringing up the election when really it was Trump who brought it up in an email. And this is just the beginning. Right now, Trump is basically on his own at Mar-a-Lago. All of his appearances are really controlled. There are photos, you know, that Ted Cruz posts saying, you know, he's in good spirits. But the mask mandate is, you know, coming to an end, and Trump is going to start rallying again. And it's not just him. It's going to be his supporters, like Congressman Clyde, who are going to continue to talk about this. So, I mean, that's part of the reason this whole Cheney as a distraction argument just doesn't land for me.
Right. Let's get back to this. So, again, Kevin McCarthy's comments were outside just after the meeting of the leadership with President Biden. This was the first time since he's been president that the four House and Senate leaders got together. They did so in the Oval Office to talk infrastructure. The president has also met with Republican senators, another group of Republican senators. He also met one-on-one with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Sudeep, it looks like he's making the effort to achieve a bipartisan solution. Is there any chance that this is going to work?
You know, it looks like Groundhog Day, where the same discussions happen over and over again. They appear to be starting from scratch each time, debating what is infrastructure, deciding what is going to be a pay for, what actually to put in it. But I do think there is a slight chance here, just because Republicans, at least the ones who are coming forward here, don't necessarily want to be left out as the ones who stood and did nothing on infrastructure and give Democrats something to run on. And there's a chance that the what we might call core infrastructure, the hard infrastructure of roads and bridges and ports and things like that, could go into a smaller bill that everyone can celebrate as a bipartisan achievement for Washington, and then put all the other stuff that the Republicans don't want into another bill that the Republicans can then scream about for the next year and a half. And so there's a chance that'll come together, and we'll know in the next 2 weeks a number of senior Republicans said by Memorial Day decision is going to have to be made here on whether they can go forward. So there's a chance, but it would be good for Biden to be able to say he did something in a bipartisan fashion, but he's ready to move ahead even if they don't get this. So he's going to have a bill of some kind coming out of this by the end of the summer.
So Gabe, does the fact that the president, Biden, now has a 63% approval rating, while Donald Trump is sporting, according to NBC, a 32% approval rating, and most of Biden's proposals are like 70 or 80% approval, does that have any impact on the way Republicans approach this, do you think?
You know, congressional Republicans, maybe not so much, because a lot of them are in fairly gerrymandered districts where they don't need to have the support of Joe Biden. And a lot of them feel very good about the 2022 midterms anyway, even regardless, because they assume that his numbers will drop and that even just through redistricting, they might be able to win over the House of Representatives. But overall, in terms of national interest or national approval, Sure. I mean, of course, there's a little bit more pressure than there would be if Biden were seen as more of a purely partisan figure than he currently is, although, of course, he primarily is because he's the president, and that's how politics works these days. But I think that, you know, we shouldn't pretend that there isn't a massive difference between an infrastructure push, which, quite frankly, the country is not focused on. So there's not a lot of pressure on a lot of these members compared to what there could be. And you know, some other bigger, more hot button issue. You know, Joe Biden has said he wants to get bipartisan things done. He's also said he was not going to let Republicans get in the way of his agenda. It's a pretty clear calculus here. He's going to let this go for a few more weeks. If they can't find a middle ground, he'll move. And he saw what happened with the COVID relief package a few months ago, which was they tried to get Republicans on board. Republicans didn't want to budge. And Democrats said, OK, then we're going to go out there and message this and say Republicans didn't want to give you your stimulus checks to people. And guess what? It's a massively popular program. People are getting money in their pockets, and Republicans are standing there saying, well, yes, isn't it great that you're getting money in your pockets, even though they didn't vote for it? So the White House doesn't have a difficult calculus here, and largely that's because they feel that the political wind is at Biden's back.
Leo, that's the bottom line, isn't it? Biden knows that he'll give it a good shot, but as he has said, not doing anything is not an option.
Right. And Republicans are going, Biden is going to take the blame for whatever happens in the next year and a half, no matter what. There's only so much messaging that Democrats can do to say, you know, Republicans are actually responsible for this, or we would have done more if Republicans had acted in a different way. That's the burden of being the sitting, having the presidency, the House and the Senate, and a big part of the reason why that party in control tends to lose seats in the first midterm of a presidency.
Well, Leah, doesn't this, as several people have pointed out, that Biden has learned the lesson from the Obama years, right? Don't depend on the Republicans if, you know, and use that and then get nothing done, right?
Right. But I mean, that's one lesson, you know, is through the Obama years. And, you know, from there, I think that is the approach that the Biden administration and Democrats are taking, looking at that specific example. But, you know, that's one scenario. You know, it's not a catch-all. And, you know, it's absolutely possible that, you know, Biden overreaches and that also ends up being problematic for him. I mean, what we saw in during the Obama administration is their overreach, or Republicans calling it overreach, actually ended up being pretty popular with Obamacare in 12 years. So, you know, it's hard to guess what the actual backlash is going to look like and what the potential benefits in the future might look like for Democrats.
And we haven't even talked about what might or might not happen with a filibuster as well. So, Gabe, I'm going to come back to you because you're there in New York, and I sort of feel like, you know, people talk about a volcano. There are all these monitors because you never know when the volcano is going to explode, but there are sort of signs once in a while that maybe it's about ready to. And there seem to be signs that Cyrus Vance, the volcano, is about to explode with perhaps an indictment of former President Donald Trump. Am I misreading that, or is that what you hear in New York?
I mean, I am very hesitant to make any predictions about when something is going to come down here, largely because we've been hearing a version of this for quite some time now. There has been a flurry of information, a flurry of reports that investigators have been looking closer and closer to the Trump family and people involved with their finances. So there are people here in the city who believe that they are honing in on the former president himself and his organization. And that could have massive, obviously, political implications if there is some sort of indictment. But what I will also say is, you know, I have been hearing this is the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency for 3 or 4 years now. And so I don't want to hazard any guess, but I wouldn't be crazy at all. Smart people seem to think that something is coming.
So, Sudeep, if the president were indicted, and he happens to still be in Mar-a-Lago, and he's indicted in New York, that could raise an interesting scenario.
You are going to have the most incredible extradition spectacle that you can imagine. So the president has a decision to make. Does he stay in Florida, or does he go up to Bedminster in New Jersey, where the Democratic governor would be happy to cough him up or let somebody come forward, or in Florida, where the law allows the governor, the Republican governor, to step in, a very Trumpy Republican governor, to step in and do his own investigation on whether he wants to let the New York folks in. And you can only imagine what that's going to look like. It would actually be exactly the fight Donald Trump wants. He wants to be in the news, and he wants to get all the attention, and he loves to raise money for what we don't know, but he loves to raise money, and he will do that in a moment like this if it comes. But it seems more likely if we get to the point that that his lawyers will negotiate something so that he's not taken away in the worst way possible.
Not frog marched out, right?
Exactly.
But as you point out, it certainly will be a spectacle. And we also have to he has to face the fact that Mar-a-Lago shuts down for the summer because it's too damn hot in southern Florida. So
exactly.
he may not have a choice. Leah, I want to throw the last one to you. We learned yesterday, we were talking earlier about some colorful, let's say, members of Congress who've gotten into trouble on their own. We learned yesterday that Joel Greenberg, the business partner and buddy of, and maybe trafficking sex partner of Congressman Matt Gaetz, is cooperating with authorities, is going to plead guilty maybe Monday and cooperate with authorities. Should we just say that Matt Gaetz is in a little trouble here, Leah?
So we don't know the details of the plea deal yet and whether it's going to, whether Greenberg is going to end up testifying against Matt Gaetz. But it hasn't been a good year for Matt Gaetz, I think you can say. And I think it's not just him that's being affected here, right? Like, he has gone across the country and campaigned against folks like Liz Cheney. My question is how kind of his wing of the party, and that I include Trump in that, the kind of, you know, populist, new anti-establishment, whatever, part of the party, what that influence continues to look like in 2024. Yesterday, Charlie Cook wrote a column where he got a look at some polling from NBC that looked at the intensity of support for Republicans who say they're more loyal to Trump than to the Republican Party. So they're all Republicans, but separating, you know, the Trump Republicans from the party Republicans, and found that the intensity of support among Trump Republicans for Trump has diminished. So more people are saying they are somewhat positive views of Trump. Fewer people are saying they have very positive views of Trump. That doesn't mean they're turning against him, but it does mean that some of that just, you know, blindly following these people and blindly following, you know, these kind of crazy stories and believing their insane defenses might not work in the next year. And might they might lose some of their power. So I think that's worth watching.
Right. And more likely to then maybe to dump somebody like Matt Gaetz. Lots to talk about. We've covered a lot of territory there. Many thanks to Sudeep Reddy, Gabe DeBenedetti, and Leah Askaranem. But before we let you go, as busy as you are, there must have been some story that caught your attention this week and made you stop and think, that's interesting, that's funny, that's serious, that's tragic, or whatever, your favorite story of the week. Where do we start? Gabe, start us off.
Sure. I was especially focused this week, well, not focused, but interested this week on the ransomware that shut down the pipeline up and down the East Coast, which got me scrambling for gas a few times this week in a pretty not very nice way. So what I want to recommend is actually a book which I read last week called This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends by Nicole Perlroth, who's a New York Times journalist covering cybersecurity. It's essentially about, you know, the subtitle of the book is the cyber weapons arm race. And I couldn't stop thinking about it this week. I read it, I suppose, good timing. This is a sort of a grim one. I'm sorry to start off this way, but it is essentially a way, I highly recommend it as a way to think about all the ways in which our infrastructure in this country, but around the world, is pretty unprotected. And today, or this week's pipeline shutdown was a very close, clear reminder of how not only weak our cyber defenses are, but how easy it is to destabilize large parts of the country, you know, I had to go to, you know, 15 different gas stations before I could fill up my tank. And that's just one tiny little piece of a pretty big story here.
It was a frightening story, particularly frightening that they paid, what is it, $5 million in ransom, reportedly, right, for these hackers in Russia. Gabe, I hope you didn't fill up any plastic bags with gas while you were.
No, luckily, Secretary Buttigieg warned me not to.
Right. Yeah. My wife, Carol, got caught in a big, long gas line here in Washington, D.C. yesterday as well. It was all up and down the East Coast. So, Deep, what caught your attention this week?
You know, there was a pretty wild lawsuit that was filed in D.C. on Thursday by Representative Doug Lamborn, a Republican from Colorado, who was essentially operating a COVID-19 Petri dish in his office. And he told the staff, "I don't care about you guys getting it." They were passing it along. He shut down a lot of efforts to deal with the virus. So this is a lawsuit by one of his former staffers that's got some really incredible details about how he belittled people, how he called the whole thing a hoax.
Whoa.
And all the awful things that he did and that his staff had to go through. But that is not the best part of the story. The best part of the story is that the representative allowed his son to live in a storage area in the basement of the United States Capitol for several weeks when he moved to Washington, D.C. So I am very looking forward to discovery in this case to figure out what on earth was going on here and who gets to live in a storage unit in the U.S. Capitol.
And what is the congressman charged with? Child abuse, or
well, it's not even the lawsuit isn't about his son living in the storage unit, which is remarkable. It's about all of the other other issues that he did that created neglect for his staffers and health problems and everything else. So I just want to know more about that storage unit, though. Give us some pictures,
so do I. Yeah, so do I. Leah, can you top that? Huh.
I mean, that Lamborn story was wild. Highly recommend reading it. But even more importantly, there's an article in The Atlantic about why cats like going inside of boxes that I think is really critical for us all to truly understand. It's by Catherine J. Wu. And it's basically going through all of the reasons cats might maybe enjoy getting inside cardboard boxes, but coming up with no real conclusion because apparently cats are very bad research subjects who do not cooperate with researchers. So also worth keeping in mind this week.
It's amazing how many times we end up with an animal story on our favorite story of the week. And the fact is, as we all know, all of us who've had cats love to climb into cardboard boxes. Well, I'm sort of embarrassed that my favorite story is also an animal story and kind of a weird one, I guess. You know, the pandemic, here's my source. So the pandemic has created lots of shortages, as Gabe mentioned, a shortage in gasoline, although that wasn't pandemic related, but shortage in toilet paper and God knows all this other stuff we've talked about, panic buying. There is also a shortage of chicken available in supermarkets. And Tyson's, who is, I think, the country's biggest producer of chicken for consumption, came out this week with a statement explaining why this shortage exists, the shortage of chicken available in grocery stores. And they say it's because of, get this, underperforming roosters. According to Tyson's, roosters are not doing their thing today. They are not fertilizing enough eggs. So they are blaming the roosters for not enough eggs, not enough sex, not enough chickens, and not enough chicken on your grocery shelves. So there you go. If you are planning dinner and go out and there's no chicken left on the shelf in the supermarket, you know who to blame. The roosters. Damn roosters got to get back to doing their thing. Huh? And maybe after the pandemic, maybe we'll see development of a Viagra for roosters. I don't know. I don't know where this story leads. I just found it fascinating. And with that, we thank you, Leah Askaranam, Gabe DeBenedetti, Sudeep Reddy. Good to have you with us. Thanks so much, guys. Thank you. And thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks for joining us here on the Bill Press Pod. Take care of yourselves. We're going to be back next week on Tuesday, our next podcast, with an interview with former Congresswoman Barbara Comstock, who is a member of this Call for American Renewal. People saying the Republican Party had better shape up, get back to its roots, or we might even go out and form a third party. So tune in for that. In the meantime, again, take good care of yourself. Put a big smile on your face when you're not wearing your mask, as long as you're double vaxxed, and come back and see us on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.